Washington Journal continues.
And on your screen right now is Dr. Andrew von Eschenbach, who is the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. Doctor, over the past couple of weeks, Americans all across the country have seen headlines like this. Front page of the Chicago Tribune this month, mystery substance in Baxter's heparin. The latest story about concerns over the quality and safety of the drugs that Americans use to maintain their health. What are the lessons we should take away from the heparin story about drug safety?
Well, I think, Susan, one of the most important lessons that the heparin story is teaching us is how rapidly and radically the world has changed around us, that world that is involved in the production of drugs as well as the food that we eat. First of all, the heparin story points out the fact that one of those changes is we are now in a global environment. Many of the things we consume every day, food and parts of the drugs that we use, do not come from the United States. They're produced abroad. And in the case of heparin, the very fundamental substance that was used with which to make heparin here in the United States actually came from China. And so the lesson there for us at the FDA is that we must expand our influence beyond our borders and engage in the total life cycle of these products, these drugs, and work very much on the front end where the basic substances are being produced all the way through its production until it's delivered to a patient.
Dr. von Eschenbach will be with us for about 45 minutes. Our phone lines are open, and we're going to be talking about food and drug safety in the United States, which the Food and Drug Administration, of course, has responsibility for. Doctor, we are joined for this conversation by students, which we always love here on C-SPAN. We have a number of students watching us at Paul Lawrence Dunbar High School in Lexington, Kentucky, and you'll see a photograph of them on the screen right now, and they are on board the C-SPAN school bus, which is visiting their school. And they're going to be asking questions as well as our discussion continues.
Great.
Right now, you talk about the need in the global marketplace to have more monitoring overseas. How large is the monitoring capability of your agency right now?
Well, that's an important question with regard to just what is the scale and scope of the responsibility at FDA. And with the students who are now participating, there may be many of them who really don't know what the FDA does. And first of all, from that point of view, our mission is to protect and to promote the health of every single American. And to do that by assuring the quality of all of the products that we consume. And the best way to describe that is the next time one of you go with your parents to the supermarket, and you go into that supermarket with the basket, with the exception of the meat and chicken that's in the back, everything else that you will encounter in that supermarket is something that we, the FDA, are responsible for regulating. Whether it's the tomatoes and lettuce on one side, the dairy products on another side, everything in the aisles of the food you'll consume, the very fact, even if you go over to where the pet food is, we also are responsible for that as well. And even in the part of the supermarket that provides drugs, the drugstore, all of those products are ours, and including when you go down the aisles to pick up the aspirin and Band-Aids, as well as your underarm deodorant and your toothpaste. So when you think about the FDA and you think about the scale and scope of our responsibilities to protect you, the sheer volume of the kind of products that we have to address in itself presents a major challenge. But that's not the whole story. The rest of the story is how much those products have changed over the recent years, the complexity of the drugs that we're responsible for. And even with regard to that food that we're eating, unlike my grandmother who took the spinach home and washed it five times and then cooked it, your parents will pick up a bag, take it home with the salad already cut and washed and ready to eat along with the salad dressing. So that story I tell you because it's important for us to think about the rapid and radical changes that are occurring that are influencing those products and how FDA has to change in order to continue to meet our mission to assure that those products are of quality, that they, as far as the food is concerned, are safe and nutritious for you to eat, and as far as the drugs and the medical devices that we use in hospitals and doctor's offices, that they're not just free of risks that are unacceptable, but they're also effective, that they actually work. So that's what we're faced with, and to meet that responsibility, we are in the midst of changing and adapting to that new reality.
Congress is responsible for oversight of the FDA, and you have your share of critics, the agency, and you're running of it. You have responded, as I've read, that you need more resources to do the job better. Can you tell us about the size of your staff and what your budget is and what you think it ought to be?
Well, as many people are concerned, not just in Congress, but in many parts of our society, recognizing the increasing challenges and what it will take for FDA to keep pace with those changes, one of those needs is to continue to expand our resources. First and most importantly, the number of people that make up the FDA. Currently, we have about 10,000 people who are the FDA family. But that number has to not only increase in size, it also has to increase in new skill sets, people who have new disciplines that are going to be necessary. And we're addressing developing that workforce. This year, we'll hire almost 700-800 people into the workforce, and over 2 years, we'll increase it by 10%. They also need better tools. And we're working to modernize our science and our scientific infrastructure, but also our information technologies. And we're revamping our entire information technology and computer infrastructure, if you will. The other thing that's very important is, as it relates to these resources, is not only how many more dollars we need to be able to pay for this, but that we're doing the right things. And so we've put a lot of effort into planning. Planning in terms of, for example, what our food protection plan will require for us to be the modern FDA, assuring the quality of food that's whether produced here in the United States or imported from abroad. And so resources plus the plans to use those resources are the things that we're doing to respond to the concerns on the part of Congress and the American people.
Let's make our first question from one of those students at Dunbar High School in Lexington, Kentucky. Good morning. What's your name and what grade are you in?
Hi, this is Clark Barnhart. I'm a freshman here at Dunbar.
Hey, Clark.
And yet, what's your question?
My question is for the doctor. If mad cow disease or TB or any disease such as that ever broke out in the U.S., what would the FDA's initial response be, and how much would something like that cost for an epidemic?
Yeah. Well, first of all, fortunately, that problem here in the United States is extraordinarily rare, but the reason for that is that in addition to responding to a problem, one of the most important things we do is to prevent those problems from occurring in the first place. So we have rules and regulations as to what, for example, is used to feed animals that you and I are going to consume and to eat. When we have an indication of a problem, we have an immediate response capability to go to the source of that problem, track it, and contain it. And the first thing we would do would be to keep that product from going any further so that no one else would be exposed to it. Now, the cost of doing that are obviously the cost of creating and maintaining the FDA that has the capacity to do that. And that's what the recent question was addressing. Right now, as far as the FDA is concerned, we're requesting in 2009 about $2.4 billion in order to be able to have the resources to respond to concerns and issues such as mad cow disease.
Next calls from Plant City, Florida. Democrats line, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Good morning there. My question this morning is for the doctor is about our drugs that we consume. As a consumer there, when I pick up a prescription from a pharmacist, there's no identifying where the origin was there. So how as a consumer can I be certain that the product that I'm consuming is from a country that has good quality assurances there?
This is a very important issue, and it's particularly important because of not only concern here in the United States, but concerned around the entire world about the problem of counterfeit drugs that are being inserted into the supply chain. So here is the important approach. The first and most important thing you and I can do as consumers of drugs is to obtain those drugs from an absolutely reliable source. The pharmacy that you use and go to must be obviously a reputable pharmacy. But even if you were to go on the internet and purchase drugs through the internet, there are certain internet sites that are certified. There's a little label that comes with a website that says VIPS, V-I-P-S. So you must first and foremost go to a reliable source for that medication. Now, what the FDA does is work across the entire supply chain to get that medicine to that reputable pharmacist. And we work right from the very beginning to assure that the components that were used in making that drug were done and developed, produced in the appropriate way. We call those good manufacturing practices. And then and make sure that the integrity of that supply chain has been maintained, the quality of how those drugs were developed and ingredients were combined. And in the totality of that, we believe that we have the safest drug supply in the world, and we're able to consistently bring quality drugs to patients who desperately need them.
Would you support that viewer's idea of source labeling?
Well, one thing that I think is really difficult to appreciate is there's no such thing as made anywhere. I think right now we're seeing in this global marketplace the fact that these products are made up of components that are assembled or mixed together. Those components can come from many, many places in the world. And so simply trying to identify and label all the places the components may have come from isn't really what gives us the certainty as far as quality. What we have to do, and what FDA is now planning to do with our initiative called FDA Beyond Our Borders, is to work even outside of the United States and work directly where those products and those ingredients are being produced to be sure that quality is built in at the very beginning and not simply depend on a label at the very end.
Next question comes from Emerson, New Jersey, Republican Line. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for C-SPAN. It's been proven that partially hydrogenated oils are harmful to people's health, and they're in a lot of products in the supermarket. If the FDA really cared about the health of the American children and people, they should ban this. And I would suggest, if you want more funds for your organization, you could take the $720 million per day that we are spending on this immoral war in Iraq. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your point of view, and one of the things I certainly think is important to point out is as it relates to the Food and Drug Administration, in addition to addressing the importance of food safety and food protection, making sure that the things we eat are free of contamination by chemicals and by bacteria, we're also paying very close attention to nutrition. And certainly one of the most significant ways we do that is by the food label, so that people can make informed choices, about the calorie content of what you're eating, informed choices about the amount of sugar, the amount of fat that happens to be in that product, and more recently we've addressed the issue of trans fats, for example. So we want the American people to be informed, and we want you to make good choices, and we want to provide you the best information with which to make those choices and enable you to take the responsibility for assuring your health.
I want to tell you about our guest. He is a native of Philadelphia. He served as a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy Medical Corps. He is a physician who along the years has held a number of positions in the especially in the area of cancer research and treatment. He was, in fact, the former director of the National Cancer Institute and was president-elect of the American Cancer Society at the time that the president tapped him to head the National Cancer Institute, and then went on to the Food and Drug Administration. He's the 20th commissioner of that agency, sworn in December 13, 2006, and as he's told us about the FDA's responsibilities, their agency oversees more than products that consume more than 20% of Americans' consumer spending. Next question, also from one of our students who is with us in Lexington, Kentucky, while we visit their high school, Dunbar High School. And what is your name and what grade are you in school?
Hi, Susan. This is Shanice Hayes. I'm a freshman at Dunbar.
What's your question?
I actually have a question for the doctor. There has been a tremendous increase in food recalls, like the 143 million pounds of ground beef that was recalled because of suspected animal abuse. Is there any policies being put into place to prevent future recalls?
You a question as a young person where food's a obviously ongoing part of your social activities and the like, do you ever pause and think, is this food safe before you put it into your mouth, or you feel confident overall about the quality of your food?
Well, not really. I never really think about that, like being a young person. I never actually take the time to like sit there and say, oh, is this going to be nutritious or anything like that? And that's something I should be very conscious about, but I never really thought about that.
Do you think this program will make you do that more often?
I think so. Being informed about the different qualities of food, I actually do think so.
Thank you for your question.
Shanice, thank you, not just for the question, but really for the perspective. You are at a moment in life where the decisions you make, including about the things that you eat, are going to make a major difference in how healthy you're going to be when you get gray hair like this. And so it's important for you to be paying attention to food and the kind of food that is the most healthy for you. We want you to consume fresh fruits and vegetables, for example, and to eat things that are low in fat. What we want to do is not only give you the information upon which to make those decisions, but also be sure that those products are safe as well. Now, with regard to beef and poultry, those are areas that the USDA, another agency in the federal government, has direct responsibility for. We do, in the FDA, all the produce, all those fruits and vegetables, seafood, etc. What we do is we, as I indicated before, are trying to continue to assure you of the safest food supply in the world, and our food supply is. If not the one of the most safe in the world, and you can have complete confidence in it. But that's not to say there isn't the risk and the concern about possible problems, possible outbreaks. It's important to remember that this food, especially as it relates to fruits and vegetables, comes out of the dirt. And so we have to be sure that we have good agricultural practices, and we work with the industry who produces and grows this food to make sure it's being done in the right way. We have to make sure it's handled in the proper way and it's processed in the proper way so that when it gets to that supermarket where you're going to purchase it, that it comes free of any risk of being adulterated or contaminated. And I think you can have confidence, but that's not to say that we're not constantly finding better ways to continuously improve our food supply, especially as much of it's coming